Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. It is Monday, January 6th, a little after 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and this is our weekly Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined on my sides up top here by John Titel and David Dorman. Down below me, the puppet David Griggs, unfortunately, with us. But fortunately with us, to make up for that, is Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org.
It's our first show of the new year, I think.
Our first Hoops HD report
Hoops
in the new year.
Report.
Yeah, and we've done
show.
Like 15 other shows here. I think. I don't know. Briggs, what the hell do we do on this show?
Well, we run through all of the basically nationally relevant programs and conferences and recap what we've seen, share our assessments of where they are, and look at what's going on next week. And then at the end, I basically talk about everything. All of the ways that you all disappoint me.
Okay, the buzzer does work tonight. That's good news. I think, hopefully it worked.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to start by pulling up the standings here. I was having a little, just laying there, I was getting things set up here. All right, we're going to start, I think we'd start tonight off with the Big 12 conference. And you see, we got into conference play this week here, and there's were quite a few notable games. But maybe we got to start Dorman. We got to start at the top here with Iowa State. You know, they looked rather impressive in their win over Baylor over the weekend.
Absolutely, they took control early, never looked back. I love this Iowa State team. I just think they have so many different options on the scoring end. You see so many big teams with only one option or two. This team has so many options, especially at the guard play. They are just so deep and so talented. The coaching's excellent. I love this Iowa State team. I think they'll be at the top of this conference all year long. This is a Final Four ready and good team.
Yeah, they are looking so good. But sitting right behind them in the standings, at least, Rocco, and we discussed it last night in the Bracket Rundown show, but I want to throw it back over to you again on this West Virginia team that I know Titel did not agree with you on how good this West Virginia team is, but they're looking pretty darn good, aren't they?
They are. Well, Javon Small's been the story. You know, he comes in this morning as the sixth best player in the country per KenPom's data. And he's had to carry the load, of course, with Tucker DeVries gone down a while back. And we don't know when or if DeVries will be back in the next couple of weeks. There's always a chance. They're also playing without Imani Hansbury the last couple of games, Chad. So this has been a really impressive team effort. And it starts and stops with the defense, top 15 in the country in defensive efficiency, top 5 in defending the three, defending overall effective field goal percentage. And that can get you a long way, as Arizona, Gonzaga, and Kansas have all found out already. And now they get Arizona again at home tomorrow. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, and Titel, I know there's a couple teams, another team I spoke about, but you being an Arizona guy, Dorman as well, maybe this Arizona team is worth a few seconds here at first.
Yeah.
Because they got the road win at Cincinnati, who – as of right now, Cincinnati is you know, is still a yet almost nationally ranked team, but had been a nationally ranked team.
Great win. I think they blew almost an 18 or 19 point lead and then somehow hung on. Their fundamentals are atrocious. Obviously, the fact that they've lost to West Virginia means they'll have a little revenge factor going on. And it's still hard to balance the metrics, as you can see, Chad. Strength of record 82, but BPI 8, like just a huge disparity there.
Well, and Griggs, I think when you look at something like that, or maybe I'll ask Dorman because he's an Arizona guy, when you look at something like that, that disparity in the predicted versus the resume metrics, doesn't that mean that maybe they've just underperformed, but they should be able to catch up to that?
Sometimes it does, and other times it doesn't. I think it's really based on the team and how the makeup is, it how the makeup looks and who they've played in the past and who you're gonna play. I think the biggest problem with the Arizona is the defense. There's just the defense just is very leaky. There's open shots against them left and right. They let up so many fast break points. For Arizona to really be a contender in this conference, the defense is going to really need to step up.
Pull up their profile, Chad.
I was going to say, they're sitting there with the number 27 rated KenPom defense in the nation, though. So
I know.
So the strength of record and whatnot, when you look at who they've beaten, with the exception of beating Cincinnati, who I don't know how good they actually are. The wins aren't that good, but as far as why are the predictive metrics good and the strength of record isn't, well, they didn't beat UCLA, but UCLA is a protected seed. They only lost by three. They didn't beat West Virginia, but we just got through done talking about how good they were, and that was an overtime loss. They haven't exactly been dropping everybody that's beaten them. They were in those games, and I think that you sort of said it, they underperformed and they lost games that they could have won, but they had a chance to win them. It's not like a Rutgers situation where they just kept beating, you know, losing games that they weren't even in against teams that aren't any good. No offense, Chad.
Yeah, you're off the show.
But I think David and Tytel, as much as I respect them, might be a little too emotionally invested here to see that Arizona actually has a very high ceiling.
I don't think I think that is the thing. They've got the high ceiling, but you've also got a Big 12 schedule ahead, and there are so many tough games here. Rocco, we haven't even mentioned Kansas yet. Heck of a week. Lose at home to West Virginia, but then they did unholy things at UCF over the weekend.
Yeah, that game was crazy. UCF coming off the big road win over Texas Tech, and just quite simply, I mean, the numbers are crazy. They shot 7 for 38 from two. That's not three. That's from two. Less than 20% inside the arc for the Knights. Obviously, that created a lot of runouts, a lot of transition, and it was over basically by halftime. I think it was 20, but especially the start of the second half, those next 10 minutes, they stretched it from 20 to 40. And again, like, it's one game, but a 51-point road win against a bubble-ish UCF team is really big for Kansas's performance numbers. That's going to go a long way, especially doing it on the road. Big game. Hunter Dickinson had a little bit of a funk going on. He really snapped out of it last night with that 27.9 rebound game and obviously a lot of other good performances. You know, the freshman, Flory Badunga, that a couple of his highlights are insane. That guy is a freak athlete, I'm sure. Way too good to come back to college next year, but a lot of fun to have in the Big 12 this year.
One other team here I want to definitely hit on tonight, Tytel, is Houston. They're actually going to be they just tipped off in their game against TCU, already up almost 10 points as we record this. But we've mentioned a few times, it's kind of a team that we've almost forgotten about non-conferences because they – didn't get any of those key wins, although they played well. They kind of just almost fade into the background. And is this one's time? It's time for them to start really stepping up.
They have. After starting 4-3, they've won six in a row. And as impressive as it is to beat UCF by 1,000, these guys beat BYU by 31 last Saturday. They're 10-3. I have them as a 5 seed. Winnable week ahead, as you said, beating TCU as we speak. Road trip to Kansas State on Saturday. They remain dominant on defense, 34% field goal percentage allowed and 55 points per game allowed, both number one in the nation. Unlike the past, they're getting it done on offense as well. 41% from behind the arc is number four in the country. They were atrocious at free throw shooting last year, just 69%. Their starting backcourt this year is Emmanuel Sharp and former NCAA champ LJ Cryer. Those guys have been near automatic, making a combined 72 of 77 at the free throw line.
Yeah, and wow. you look ahead of their schedule also, Tytel. I mean, I think these next five conference games are all very winnable until they go to Kansas January 25th. This could be when people really start paying attention to this team, couldn't it?
Yes, which is why their predictive metrics are as good as anybody's in the country, I think.
Yeah.
I still think Houston can win the Big 12. We did kind of forget about them. Two things that, at least even when you look at who and what we talk about on this show, we talk about big wins. They didn't have any. And we talk about big upsets, and they didn't get upset. So it was just sort of like, you know, team hold serve week after week after week. And there was nothing noteworthy about them. And I do think people kind of forgot about them. But holy crap, this team is good. You know, Auburn, Alabama, they didn't beat them by much.
Let's take a quick look at the rest of the upcoming schedule here in the Big 12. There is a ton of interesting games, beginning with the Arizona-West Virginia game tomorrow night. But beyond that, we've got, what else do we have? Kansas at Cincinnati over the weekend. Maybe not really a ton of interesting games, Griggs.
Well, yeah, I think that that's a big game for Cincinnati because
Pat
I
Baylor,
know that I've
yeah.
been beating them up quite a bit. If they can win that one, even though it's a home game, they're going to shut me up some. I don't think they can.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's a huge week for them with a trip to Baylor and the home game against Kansas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll win either one of them. But if they win one of them or both, or certainly both of them, I will concede that I was wrong and that they are better than I thought.
Also, look at Wednesday night, Arizona State at Kansas. Another game to circle here. Arizona State, you know.
Also has a same week as Cincinnati, just backwards.
Yeah. Then Baylor at home too.
Yep.
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 And maybe Rocco also BYU's week. They have two very winnable games: home against Texas Tech at TCU. But you know, after the way they played their last time out, you know, they could really use something to get going here.
I think the BYU delta between home and road is about as extreme as anybody you'll find. So a win at TCU will really help them if they can get it.
Yeah, they're kind of missing road wins, as Griggs would be very
And it's
apt to
very
point out to
difficult to win
us.
at BYU. So it's
Yeah.
just, they can get a couple road games, they'll be ahead of the curve big time.
Yeah. And their first few road games in the conference are winnable. So they have a shot here to make a move at TCU, at Utah, at Colorado. They could come away with two or three of those.
Yep.
Let's jump over to, lost my notes here. Let's jump over to the SEC here. The conference with, I think, every single one of the top 25 teams in the nation in it. Dorman, if I counted correctly, or maybe not quite, but almost.
Loaded. Absolutely loaded.
You look at this, everybody in the conference except LSU, Texas, and South Carolina receiving votes at least one of the polls. And as of last night, we still thought Texas might be an NCAA tournament team. So I'm not that certain where we start, but maybe we start at the top with these two teams here, Tennessee and Auburn. Both got out to start, one of those starts in conference play.
Yeah, we'll find out a lot more about Tennessee. They're going on the road tomorrow. They're going to play the Gators. The Gators impressed me on Saturday with a loss at Kentucky. They were in that game. I'm high on Kentucky, so I thought Florida was impressive. I don't think at any point that will be a bad loss. And now they're going to play the Volunteers at home, see if Tennessee can come out of this week undefeated. I don't think they do. I think Florida gets them tomorrow night.
Yeah,
That's
and
a big one.
Rocco, what about this Kentucky team here? I mean, you know, they've been kind of just rolling along. You know, did some nice things. Had you know the Ohio State loss and the Clemson loss, which you kind of weren't that great. But now with that Florida win, albeit at home, I'm really paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be difficult to beat at home. Mark Pope's got the fan base really rocking. I think he's just done an amazing job since he got hired, getting those. All those people, the Big Blue Nation, there's tens of thousands of them everywhere, rally behind. So I think that's going to really help them this year at Rupp Arena going forward, as we saw a preview of on Saturday early morning. They have some big home games coming up with A&M and Alabama next week. This week, they got to go on the road. And I think that's where we'll learn a lot about Kentucky when they go to Georgia tomorrow and Mississippi State on Saturday. It's a really tough week. It's an overly reliant transition. Everybody can shoot 3-point, as we saw at BYU, just better players and a couple of the same guys led by Jackson Robinson, of course. And they're doing it right now without Kirk Crisa. They've dealt with injuries to Lamont Butler. I've been really, really impressed on how together they are and how the lack of egos on Kentucky is rare. And it's kind of a refreshing Kentucky team, honestly.
This is a big week, and I know that I'm always the one that harps on this. They have not they've only played one true road game, and while it was against a good team and they played well in that game, they didn't win it. If they don't win one of these next two, I do think they will win at Georgia, and they could win at Mississippi State. But if they lose them both, I'm not saying they're in trouble, but I'm saying that they're probably not as good as some of the praise that they've been getting. If they can't win one of the next two on the road.
And they've got to be ready for court storms, right, Griggs? Because these
Yeah,
are
they
court
do.
storming situations in both games.
Let's talk about a couple other teams here. First of all, Tytel, look down in the standings, way out of 14th in the line there. Missouri, a team that I think we talked about a little bit earlier in the season. We kind of forgot about them for a little while, it feels like.
That's because the bad news for Coach Dennis Gates is he has exactly one win in the past 3 weeks, and it's over Alabama State. And frankly, his non-conference strength of schedule is a bit embarrassing. The good news, there's no shame in losing to Illinois and St. Louis and to Auburn on the road. I have them as one of my first four out. They got a pair of winnable home games this week, LSU and Vandy. Then they head to play the Gators next week in Florida. And their fans are just hoping that their opponents will stop making free throws. 80% is second highest in the nation. Total team effort on offense, though. 86 points a game is top 20 in the nation, but nobody on the team is scoring more than 14 a game, so everybody chips in. And can the puppet remind me who won the border war last month despite not having Caleb Grill?
It was Mizzou, and that might be enough for them. I you know, if they were going to win one game in 3 weeks, as long as they beat Kansas.
Griggs, let me stick with you, because one of their games is that game against Vanderbilt. And they were the only SEC team to pick up a road win in the conference openers, winning that game at LSU. They've been sitting there with this gaudy record, but we were looking at it. They had a garbage conference strength, non-conference strength of schedule. Now you got the LSU win. You got a wins over Nevada and TCU on neutral courts. Are we paying a little attention here?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not ready to anoint them a protected seed. If they win out, if Vandy can win out, I think they'll get
one. Oh, okay. How about their next two games, though? Home Mississippi State at Missouri. Two interesting games for them.
It really is, and it's the kinds of games that they have played well enough, especially getting the win at LSU, that leads me to believe that they're good enough to win one or both of them. Mississippi State, a very good team, but Vandy gets them at home. Mizzou is flaky, like we just got done kind of talking about them. And, compare – I think that if they can win at LSU, they can win at Missouri. I'm not saying they'll win both of them, but I certainly think it's worth paying attention to. They've played their way into the discussion. And if they get both of those games and then suddenly – their profile's looking really good.
I want to mention one other team here, Rocco. The Texas Longhorns. I know currently Texas fans are thinking football. That's all they're thinking. But, is there cause for concern with this team? That's just, they don't have any horrible losses, but I don't know that they've looked very good, even in their wins.
Right, yeah. I think the distraction of football is a great time to be focused on football, because some of these teams in the SEC, as we talked about yesterday, have to start falling, and this is the one I have limited faith in. I just think some of the parts don't exactly fit quite yet. I do love the parts individually in certain cases, like Jordan Pope was an amazing find. The two kids from Indiana State were incredible finds, nice money spent, I would say. But I would also say that these guys just haven't come together in these key games. They weren't as competitive in the UConn game. That was a home game where they got de-cleated, basically. And then the A&M game, you would think you'd be up for a renewed rivalry game Saturday night, and that game just totally fell apart in front of them. And that's not a good sign for their future road. And we've already seen UConn come in and beat them at home. There's teams at UConn's level in the SEC that can come into Austin and do that to them as well. This could be some really tough sledding, especially, Chad, with these next four games coming up.
This is amazing. Auburn, who is most people believe is the best team in the nation, even though they're number two in the polls. Tennessee, who's the only undefeated team in the nation. At Oklahoma, who was the second to last undefeated team in the nation. And at Florida, who was the third to last undefeated team in the nation. I mean, wow.
If they win one of those, that's an accomplishment. I don't think they win any of them. Right. Based on everything that you and Chad just said, Rocco. They're not as good as any of those teams. They're not even close.
No. I'll throw it out there, though. Maybe Ty Tell, let me ask you this. Tennessee, while they are undefeated, the only undefeated team in the nation, they didn't necessarily blow through the last few of their non-conference games. They struggled a bit even with the likes of Norfolk State and Middle Tennessee, despite what those final scores were. Is maybe Tennessee just not as good as number one as what some of the pollsters think,
Yeah, can you remind me where Tennessee's defense ranks among the nation?
Okay. That's not bad, but
no, it's not.
But again, yes, they do have the number one defense going to Ken Pom in the nation. I'll give you that.
I get what you're saying, Chad, but I think part of it was not all of it, but part of it. It's just hard to get that high up for those type of games over Christmas that aren't conference games, that are road bye games. And when they needed to run away from Norfolk State and Middle Tennessee, and again, great efforts by both those teams, but Tennessee was able to bury them after they played with their food for the first 30-ish minutes of those games or so. I don't think they're the best team in the country, but I think they're the second or the third best. I just think Auburn's a little bit better. Yeah, they're damn good.
Okay. Here is the upcoming schedule, and we'll find out a lot about Tennessee. Huge road test tomorrow night at Florida. Oh, by the way, we got Auburn at Texas. Oh, by the way, we got Mississippi State at Vanderbilt. Oh, by the way, we got Kentucky. I could
Yeah.
just go down this entire list. I don't think I will.
That's a bubblicious game between LSU and Mizzou. I mean,
I mean, you could
Kentucky,
probably
Miss State to Saturday. It's loaded.
yeah.
A&M at Oklahoma, Tennessee at Texas, Alabama at A&M on Saturday, Florida at Arkansas, Oklahoma's at Georgia on Saturday. If you just watched SEC games, I guarantee you're going to be watching great basketball for the next week and forget about the rest of the nation. But let's jump over to the Big Ten, Tytel, let's start with that team right up top there. How about Michigan State? How about Sparty's off to a 12-2 start, and they picked up the win at Ohio State over the weekend.
A good week for the Buckeye football team, but not for the basketball team, as the Sparty improved to 12-2. Only a pair of 8-point neutral site losses, one to the Jayhawks in Atlanta, one to Memphis and Maui. I have them as a 5 seed. I think they'll beat Washington at home on Thursday, but a tough road trip to Northwestern on Sunday. And the reason they have so many close games, 28% shooting behind the arc, bottom 25 in the nation. The reason they win so many close games, 81% from the free throw line, is fifth in the nation. And they own everybody on the boards, a 41 to 30 average rebound advantage per game. And with the retirement of Jim Larrañaga at Miami last month, Coach Tom Izzo is now the second longest tenured coach in the nation, behind only Greg Campy at Oakland. And he's trying to make his 27th straight NCAA tourney appearance, the all-time record, 28 by Kansas from 1990 to 2017. I think he's going to do it.
Wow, coming close to a record. Rocco, let me ask you about another team here that we had almost written off a little earlier in the season. The Indiana Hoosiers, they had really looked bad for a while, but they went yesterday to Penn State, and albeit the game was played in Philadelphia, but they picked up what will count on their profile as a road win against a pretty good Penn State team, 77-71. Paying attention again?
You have to pay attention. It's the Big Ten. A four-game winning streak puts you right back in it, even if you're Minnesota right now. So I would say, they unleashed Omar Ballo after his little incident slash injury the last couple of games. And man, it was rare. Tytel can back me up, and so can Dorman, to see him go much more than 25 minutes in a game. He went 32 minutes in that one. And Penn State, that was something that really stood out in the non-conference, was Penn State size, especially with Yarnik Conan Niederhauser. And that was his roughest game of the year. Big matchup exploitation by the Indiana staff. And Ballo goes for 25 and 13, arguably his most important game of the year. And they really needed him, because they're without Ray Now, who was out yesterday. And so they're doing some patchwork. But I really, of course, liked that lineup combination that worked against Penn State. Now, they do have to turn around and host USC. I'll caution, USC's playing a lot better, but long travel for them. And Indiana, of course, positioned well to find a way to win that.
Yeah, they have a somewhat favorable schedule ahead, although look at this game January 14th. We'll talk about it again next week. But Dorman, the Fighting Illini, I really think, even despite what Tytel said about Michigan State, this team has looked to be like the best team in the Big Ten.
I think I'm with you, Chad. I think they have the highest ceiling. They're talented, extremely talented. They got some bigs that are really just playing really well, and the guard plays strong. And Brad Underwood, to me, is a really good coach. The next few at home, Penn State, USC, I think they should be able to handle, although I am high on Penn State. I'm with you, Chad. I think Illinois has all the makings to play well in the whole conference schedule and be the Big Ten regular season champion. They seem to have all the parts and a deep bench as well. I think Illinois would be my pick right now to win the Big Ten.
And I'm looking way, way ahead to the middle of February here, but there is one key non-conference game left, probably the most important non-conference game left of the season, Illinois-Duke, February 22nd. Let's not forget about that as we go through the season. But, Griggs, Illinois this week had that huge win at Oregon, but how about the Ducks? I mean, despite that, they did bounce back with the win over Maryland at home, a four-point win over Maryland.
Yeah, and I mean they had to kind of they kind of had to really battle for that one. But overall, a couple things here. I still really like this profile. They've got a win against Alabama, who's really good. I mean, protected seed level good. Texas A&M, but then when you start to look at like their upper level wins, they all came within the first 3 weeks of the season, or most of them. And now when you look at them, like, are they still playing at that level that they were throughout November? And not to take anything away from Illinois, I'll go so far to say that it was probably the most impressive single game performance that any team has had. Not the best team, but I don't even think Auburn's played a game as impressive as that single game was. But Oregon doesn't look quite as good as they were when they had some of those bigger wins.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, those three wins, all the players there was Festival there, Alabama, yeah. A&M, San Diego State. You take those aside, had they gone 0-3 out there, this would be a very different profile, I think.
It would be. And to be fair, they did not go 0-3. They went 3-0. But if you're trying to assess how good are they now and where are they going to be in March with what's left, you do have to at least account for all three of those happened in about a 72-hour period.
And one of the interesting things this week with Oregon and Rocco, I pulled up also UCLA. They've got it coming next. Actually, they've got it coming in the next week as well. We're going to start seeing these long travel for these big new West Coast Big Ten teams. And, you know, that maybe that's the big question we have going ahead. How does Oregon do going to Ohio State and Penn State, who on paper they should beat, but you do that travel?
The last thing an Oregon fan wants to hear right now is Ohio State, and here we go again. but I had to get that out. But yeah, no, the thing is I think it's sort of manageable. I think the first game of the trip is going to be harder than the second. I think once you're out there and you've been there a couple days, you know, I think that would give them a little bit better chances to perform at a higher level against Penn State in this example. But in general, I think they'll get out there a day early, do the shoot around, and winter conditions aside, hopefully they'll be fine. And that goes for UCLA later this week. It'll be interesting because obviously in football it was a huge deal. Everybody struggled on both sides, going east to west, west to east, and in basketball, you know, this is something I talked to Kyle Lamb about way back in my first couple of years with Hoops HD and you guys. There's all this data about traveling more than one time zone and how big of a percentage your chances of win dip. Now it's just a regular thing. So really curious if that data keeps holding or if maybe we'll start to see some more wins out of the road team as these teams get more familiar with it.
Yeah, I do want to say that it's not like these guys are taking a bus or flying coach.
No, they have money. It's all charter.
Yeah, they've all chartered.
There's a lot of money in this league. Yeah,
it's essentially like, you know, it's a drive from Cincinnati to Chicago is essentially the time frame it's going to take to fly.
Right.
This might sound a little crazy. I think Oregon ends up much closer to the bubble in March than most really think.
Wow.
I think their ranking is a little inflated. I think they're closer to the bubble than most think come March.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing about this week, too, is the league kind of helped Oregon out because Ohio State's playing tonight at Minnesota. So they actually have one extra rest day and Ohio State has to travel back. So I think it kind of worked out for this trip.
Yes, as you mentioned, the Ohio State-Minnesota game there. But there's quite a few very big games here. I don't know that we can list them all, but they are all on the screen. Oregon at Ohio State. We just mentioned that one. I don't know. Anything else, Griggs, that you want to quickly point out before in this upcoming schedule before we jump over to the ACC?
I didn't have anything else to point out, but if we're going to the ACC next, maybe I should try and talk about as many things as I can.
Nebraska and Iowa tomorrow night. Who needs it more? Both of them.
That's a bubble game. Yes.
Hey, Griggs, I did have one other thing to bring up on the Big Ten real quick. That
okay, sure.
That Northwestern Penn State ending.
We yes. didn't talk about that. Yeah, we mentioned it last night a little bit, but go ahead.
Wow.
It was, in case you didn't watch last night's show, I don't think I've ever seen a game as poorly managed at the end by the officials as that. And I've seen it was so far outside the normal parameters of a bad call or a missed call. Well, what happened, Rocco? It was phenomenal how bad they screwed that up.
Yeah, well, it was closing seconds, I think 6 seconds left, and Northwestern had a shot that looked to maybe be altered by a Penn State defender touching the rim or touching the net or something that in the area of basket interference / goaltending. So the referee blew the whistle and blew the play dead. But even though the shot missed, and whether it was goaltending or not, if they would have let them play on, it was an easy putback to tie the game 82-82.
The putback went through, and the whistle was late.
And the whistle was late, so that made it look even worse. They go to the monitor, review the call, and determine, nope, it's no goaltending, no basket interference, which was the right call. But all they can do at that point is give them the ball back out of bounds on the baseline. And that took away the free basket that they already had.
This was after a five-minute review.
And it made me
Chris Collins should have lost his mind.
He handled it really well, too, in the give him credit. I'm surprised he didn't blow a gasket. But like in the EPL, like in soccer now, I think with the replay, you can just play through an offsides. They might want to look at figuring out a way to let them play through, because that really did change the game, obviously.
Yeah.
And I thought they were trying to tell these officials, don't blow the whistle. Let the play continue and then blow the whistle. But
yeah, so in soccer, there's what's called advantage. They're not going to call a foul or stop a play if the team that was fouled is not
what I'm talking about. Yep.
Yeah, is not gonna. So in that, like in soccer, that never would have happened because they just never would have whistled it unless they missed the putback. Then they would have whistled it. The whistle would not have come until the play was over. This is not a soccer podcast.
Yeah. But Chad said, I thought we were waiting until the play was over. Then when there was a stop ball, a dead ball, we were going to go back and look at it then.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah.
Tytel, ACC, take it away. Where are we going? I lost my notes. I lost my train of thought.
We're shortly going to Louisville, but as long as we're mentioning ridiculous finishes, if you didn't see the end of the Carolina-Notre Dame finish on Saturday when Carolina had a winning probability of 11% with 15 seconds left and won the game, do yourself a favor after our podcast and check it out. As far
Foul into three made three a four-point play, yes, but – Great. Go ahead.
Thank you for spoiling that. Since losing at Kentucky on December 14th, all that Louisville new coach Pat Kelsey's done, four wins in a row, including three ACC games by double digits, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia. I have them as an 11 seed. Big week ahead against two teams who are undefeated in league play. They host Clemson Tuesday and then a road trip to Pitt on Saturday. I'm still not sure how they're winning all these games, frankly. They're shooting under 30% from behind the arc. The most amazing part is they seem to have as many injuries as the Detroit Lions defense. BYU transfer Ali Khalifa, redshirting for the year due to a knee injury. Charleston transfer Kobe Rogers, out for the year with a leg injury. South Florida transfer Kayshon Pryor, played seven games. He's done when he tore his ACL. Washington transfer Corin Johnson, played two games. He's done with shoulder surgery. The only healthy player, it seems like, is Wisconsin transfer Chucky Hepburn. He saved their season. 16 points. 6 assists, 3 steals a game, while shooting 83% at the free throw line.
Well, we'll see if this is an interesting week though with the Clemson and Pitt games. But I want to pick up another team here, Dorman, North Carolina Tar Heels. Is this team in trouble?
Big trouble, big trouble. Because at some point you have to win some games. Now the good thing for the Tar Heels is this conference, the ACC, is way down in my opinion. I don't see a lot of strong teams. I know Pitt and Clemson are at the top of it, right below Duke. But even them, those teams shouldn't even scare Carolina. Their talent is better than theirs. So Carolina should be able to run through this conference pretty handily. I mean, Boston, Wake Forest, I was super high on. They haven't looked good. So I think the conference being down this year, and I know this usually goes the other way, might help them because I think they're just going to start to pile up wins against the conference. The seed will probably be not great if they do get in because of all these out-of-conference losses, but they have a chance to pile up the wins in the weak ACC coming up right now.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, Rocco, as a bracketologist, you know this also. When you look at that number three non-conference strength of schedule of the nation, if it's close, don't they get in?
If it's close enough, yeah. And I think in a league like this, you know, like we said last night, the ACC being so down, and it's a little bit of a follow-up from last year, they should have a surplus of wins as well, whereas the Big 12, the SEC, and the Big 10, you're going to be comparing teams with a lot more losses in theory. However, with that being said, North Carolina's already got six, so they got to get hot, and they got to take care of all that business that Dorman was alluding to because they still will have to play Duke twice. They get Pitt twice. They get SMU coming up. So, you know, they're not like the typical ACC team. They're playing the toughest schedule possible.
Yeah, and real quick here, Griggs, one more team. Duke. We talked about last week that they had a big game cut up at SMU. This was a chance for SMU to make the statement. I think Duke made a huge statement in that game over on Saturday.
They really did. And this was an SMU. That game really intrigued me, at least the storyline going into it. SMU had a bloated record. They had a lot of momentum built up. It was a big, big showcase game in the ACC. Probably their first one as a full ACC member. And it did not go well.
Upcoming though, we have tomorrow night. We have Pitt at Duke. While it is at Duke, it's a somewhat interesting game here that might be one of the better games of the entire week here in the conference, unless I'm missing something else.
Yeah, Clemson Louisville is kind of intriguing. Yes, I know we kind of talked about it already. You know, yeah. That Wake Forest Miami game is not a good game.
Jeez. How about the Big East Conference? And Tytel, before we get to the top of the conference, I want to bring up this Villanova team. I mentioned them last night as well. We had pretty much written them off with the Virginia loss and the Columbia loss, but
the near loss to Central Connecticut.
Back to back wins now, and I'm starting to pay a little. We're starting to pay a little attention again.
When you win 7 of 8, yes, and everybody should beat DePaul. But when you beat them by 44, that impresses the heck out of me. So I have them as about a 17 seed right now. Tough week ahead. They host UConn on Wednesday and then head to St. John's on Saturday. And the defense has been mediocre, but it's hard to outscore them when they're making all their threes. 42% behind the arc is number two in the nation. And the star of the show is two-time all-conference power forward Eric Dixon, soon to be three-time all-conference. 26 points per game leads the nation. He shot under 35% behind the arc last year. This year, 49%, even though he's 6'8", 260. And even though he scored all of 64 points as a freshman, he's on pace to score his 2,000th career point probably by Groundhog Day.
Wow. Dorman, I thought it was an interesting week also for Creighton. They started with a home win over a pretty good St. John's team, and then a close loss at Marquette. You know, maybe we're starting to pay a little attention to Creighton as well again after we were almost ready to write them off.
I still like this Creighton team. They've been injured. They've had a lot of guys sit out games here and there. But I think McDermott is really – I love McDermott. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think Creighton puts together a solid Big East schedule here and starts to put some wins together. At Butler, they should be able to – you know, the next few, minus the UConn game, they should be able to win, start piling up some wins. The Big East is, you know, I think still going to get three or four minimum. They can be that third or fourth team, but they got to get going now. They put too many losses together to, you know, to go 500. You know, they really got to start winning. Starts at Butler later this week.
Yeah, to kind of build on that, if you go back to that for just a second, Chad, I just kind of wanted to point that out. Like, it is lacking in tier one wins. The win that they had against St. John's, I think, was obviously huge. And this profile, you know, it might make you hold your nose when you look at it initially, but then when you look at Alabama, very competitive in that game, even though they lost, they almost beat Marquette, as you yourself just mentioned. They seem to be playing now at a higher level, and while they were blown to bits, they've been playing a lot better lately, and they have that big win against Kansas. And when you look at their next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games, 8 of them are winnable.
Eight of
Exactly.
them are winnable. I assume the unwinnable one is probably at UConn. But Rocco, how about our two-time defending national champions? They beat Providence this week, but wow, they were done down double digits in the first half, and they sweated.
They had to sweat. And Aidan Mahaney finally came through, re helped rescue the old St. Mary star over here, finally getting a chance. Got 15 points off the bench. It was really key down the stretch. But yeah, it's been interesting because, I think one of the issues and why Mahaney was so key, Jaden Ross went down, I think, early in the game, played only 11 minutes. And obviously, Providence capitalized on that early. But, UConn trying to figure out how to use these pieces on the bench. We'll see what Ross's status is going forward. But again, UConn showed it in Maui and maybe a couple other times that they might have some off nights this year, and they're a little bit more mortal than what we're used to.
And they have a chance this week to put two teams seriously onto the map. When they go to Villanova and they go to Georgetown, if they lose either one of those games, whoever beats them is going to start getting a lot of attention, especially come next week.
And is Hurley's seat starting to heat up a little bit?
Upcoming schedule here. We just mentioned those two UConn
One more
games to
thing
go.
about UConn. I just wanted to point this out. They did have that stretch in Maui where they lost all three games and came in eighth.
Yes, Griggs, we've heard that line before.
Well, our good friend Zach is watching. I just want to make sure he knows.
It's also an interesting week for the Georgetown Hoyas at Marquette and hosting UConn. Tytel, you'll be there Saturday, right? UConn at Georgetown?
Let's just say
Maybe.
that my friend decided to have her kids' bar mitzvah that day, so that's
Oh. Oh no. Yeah.
Ironically, she's a UConn fan, so it must be serious.
Yeah.
There's the rest of the upcoming schedule here in the Big East. A couple other
Yeah,
conferences to go ahead, Rocco.
we mentioned it yesterday, but Liam McNeely's going to miss about 3 weeks or so, 2 to 4 weeks, and that's opportunities for Villanova, Georgetown, and Creighton next week to all get UConn if they can.
Absolutely. Also interesting week for St. John's. They could use some wins at
Yes.
Xavier and hosting Villanova, both winnable games.
Yeah.
But Mountain West Conference time, and Griggs, here's Utah State now 4-0, but San Diego State with the one conference loss, but they had that nice win over the weekend at Boise.
Yeah, that was a really nice win. I think that was a hugely pivotal game for both of them. And you normally, the reason why I would say it's a pivotal game, even though it's early January, is that while this conference certainly isn't an under the radar conferences, the chance to get quality wins of that level are just not as many as any of the conferences that we've talked about previously. So that one was big. And then now when you're starting to look at Boise, are they going to have enough to be inside the bubble at the end? So a really nice win for them. But Utah State, I am just, I know we spend a lot of time talking about paper and resumes and metrics, and Utah States are good, but we've all watched this team. How good is this team? I certainly think they're worthy of the top 25 ranking, and they're probably going to continue. They might be ranked really high at the end of the year, but I think that this is a top. I think this is one of the 20 best teams in the country. They're very good.
It's incredible. What, three coaches in 3 years, you always think they're going to take a hit. And the program's incredible. They just keep on winning. It's a great team.
And if you look at Nevada, St. Mary's, and San Diego State, and you look at how good those teams are at home, how few home games they lose, I don't think there's 10 teams that would win all three of those.
Oh, Boise State and San Diego State, there's such consistency with the coaching staff year after year. Utah State gets pulled apart every year and they just come back strong.
And the best part is they are definitely on pace to take the old ogre bucket again as the as a Beehive state champions. Rocco, we got undefeated with them. Also, same conference record is this New Mexico team. How about Richard Pitino's squad here? I know they had that New Mexico State loss, but not that bad. Other than that,
I mean, what a night Friday night in that overtime thriller buzzer beater off of a loose ball by Nelly Jr. Joseph. We have a whole different conversation if that doesn't go into his hands, let alone go into the basket. In Nevada, of course, coming out swinging at 0-3, now 0-4. Kudos to the Lobos for getting that done. That's a lot harder to win than you might think, playing a desperate, talented Nevada team. I got to see them in the VCU game, my first ever visit to the Pit. That was an awesome experience. Donovan Dent is extremely skilled. Of course, it doesn't hurt that I saw him go for 40 points in that game, but they're a loaded team. They definitely look eye test wise like a tournament team. True Washington didn't play in that VCU game. He's back. He looks good. Mustafa Amzil was a really good player, and so was CJ Noland at their previous stops. I think they've got the goods. I think the problem is the rest of the Mountain West outside of Utah State has been somewhat disappointing, and they're going to have to hold up in their Utah State, San Diego State chances, but then also be able to take care of the middle. And they almost lost their first home test against the middle with Nevada. They have already won on the road at Colorado State, which will help. But when they play Boise twice, those are going to be tough games. There's just a lot of tough games in this league. So we'll see if they can pass all those tests or a big chunk of them. But otherwise, I like them. Yes, Chad.
And Tytel, 3-0 in conference, UNLV, maybe not quite the resume these other teams have, though.
True, but trending upward. Coach Kevin Kruger was 5-5 just a few weeks ago. He's won four straight. All five of his losses are to Tier 1 and Tier 2 teams, and I think some of those Tier 2 might end up as Tier 1 eventually. He hasn't beaten a good team all year, so a very tough test on Tuesday with the trip to Boise. And some people talk about freshmen encountering a sophomore jinx in year number two, but point guard Deedon Thomas Jr. has followed up his conference co-rookie of the year performance last year by taking it up a notch this year. 16 points a game on 42% shooting behind the arc. He's even lowered his turnovers per game despite playing the same amount of minutes.
Yep. One of their losses was to Memphis. And Dorman, I think it's a good segue to go right over to Memphis. Actually, before I did that, I did actually show the upcoming schedule in the Mountain West. So real quick, there's the schedule. The San Diego State has that game at New Mexico. And UNLV at Boise State among the notable games this week.
Utah State.
Coach Miles,
the toughest road games.
Boise State at Utah State, yes. And Utah State at San Jose State.
It's Utah State at San Jose State tomorrow.
Dorman,
that one's over the head.
American Conference and this Memphis team, they won big at Florida Atlantic, but they struggled a bit at home against North Texas over the weekend.
They did struggle with North Texas over the weekend. North Texas played well. I think North Texas, is a real solid team. Memphis this year is different. Instead of freshman, All-American, McDonald's guys, and big-time talent and young, they're old. They have experience. It seems like Penny on the sidelines is just more under control, and he's a little more confident, it looks like, because his team is older. They've been through this they've been through the college schedule. They have juniors and seniors playing big-time minutes for him, and I just think it's down the stretch here when we get into conference games that you're going to have to win. I just like Penny's team this year. I think they're all their experience. I think this team is a little actually underrated nationally. This team is really good.
Yeah, and you look at that. One of the things that always keeps standing out to me are the resume-based metrics. One of the metrics that is on the official NCAA team sheet is the KPI, and he's had them the only metric that Auburn isn't number one in the nation, I think, is the KPI, who's got Memphis at number one.
Which is a little, not to question his metrics, but I agree that Memphis is good. But one of their losses was to a team that is noticeably Auburn.
Yes, and they also have the Arkansas State home loss. Tytel, think look kind of towards actually in second place in the conference right now. How about Rice? I don't think we've discussed on this podcast in the last 5 years.
Nor should we have. They lost. They only won 11 games last year, but new coach Rob Lanier is now 11-4 after starting conference play 2-0. So it's time to take a shallow dive into his team's resume. You talk about teams that have played Arkansas State. They played them and they beat them in the Bahamas. That one's holding up quite nicely. All four of their losses are by single digits. Unfortunately, Unfortunately, I don't have the necessary verbal skills to explain their one-point loss to UNT last month. That's not North Texas. That's D2 school UNT Dallas.
UNT Dallas.
Is there a tier 5 we can put that in, Chad? I mean, come on. Test Wednesday, they head to the real UNT. Their offense has sucked, frankly. Their defense has been decent. They only allow 28% behind the arc and 45% inside the arc, both top 30 in the nation. And USC upstate transfer Trey Broadnax has looked très bien with 14 points, 6 boards, and 4 assists per game. He's top 20 in the conference in all 3 of those categories.
Yeah, and Rice, just to be clear, is not a team that's going to be within 100 yards of the bubble. But I'm glad you brought them up. Because the job, like Rob Lanier has done fantastic turning them around. They have just been awful. I mean, ever since Willis Wilson was there, which I think was over 2 decades ago, they've been awful.
Here's the upcoming schedule. Maybe the only really notable game is Saturday just because it's Memphis's game hosting East Carolina. Although, you know, Rice at North Texas on Wednesday, as Tytel just mentioned. But Rocco, let's jump over to the West Coast Conference. And maybe before we even talk about the Gonzaga, maybe we should talk a little about the St. Mary's Gales team, who is now 3-0 in conference, but hanging around bubbles in some of the predictions that I've seen so far.
Yeah, they'll start. They got a nice little January on the schedule. So I think we're going to be in purgatory for a little bit, Chad, because they went to Portland and it was close for like 5 minutes, and then they won by 23. Pepperdine came to town, and Pepperdine's playing way better, and they beat them by 30. So it's the same old movie as far where I'm sitting. I'll be there tomorrow night, so I'm glad you asked about them. I got the LMU game. LMU coming with their tails between their legs after Gonzaga just pounded them in L.A. But LMU's had, you know, they crushed the Beavers the week before, so going to get a look at LMU one last time, and I'm sure St. Mary's will be fine tomorrow. And then again, they don't really have a big test till January 23rd with the San Francisco home at Pullman, which will be tough, Saturday the 25th game. Until then, it's just they're trying to figure things out rotation-wise. Morauskas didn't have a good game over the weekend, but he was awesome in the non-con. They just haven't been able to find the consistency. And Luke Barrett's done an admirable job trying to be the next Alex Dukas. And he's getting that kind of minutes, but he's just not Alex Dukas. So I think that's been a little bit of a problem as well.
Yeah, and after that game on the 23rd against San Fran, you got to look at these next 5 games. 4 out of the 5 are on the road, all against top 100 net teams. And the home game, it's the Zags. Yeah.
It's really 6 if you count the it keeps going all the way to Washington State at home.
That stretch is going to define this Gales team, though, I think, this season.
Absolutely.
I kind of got it. There's a couple teams I want to get, anybody's takes on, but particularly Rocco's and Tytel's. One is the two former Pac-12 teams. Like, one is Wazoo and one is Oregon State. Oregon State's been a little disappointing since I thought they were showing signs of life, but still no pushover. Maybe they can get inside the bubble. I legit love this Eastern Washington team and these new Wazoo uniforms of theirs. Are they a tournament team, or could they be?
I mean, I think the credentials are starting to come together, no doubt. And it's been a heck of a job by David Riley in his first year, of course, coming from Eastern. But with a lot of his roster, and also losing, you know, one of the Watts boys, Isaiah Watts, is out for the year. Lawan Watts has been sensational, 24 against the Dons on Saturday. But I also like what they're getting out of this freshman from Iceland, Thomas Thrasterson. He was actually like the key glue guy when the game was tight against the Dons and got them over the hump. Just a really loose ball, plays great defense kind of guy. And Nick Calmese has been a huge part of their team. Of course, a Washington Husky last year got overlooked a little bit too much by Mike Hopkins, but he's gone. So he's just done a nice job, not only bringing his Eastern guys, but these other pieces that have fit really, really well together. And now with the injuries, they're down to their eight guys. He doesn't have to think about going deeper into his bench for any reason. This is what they're rolling with going forward, and it's been working.
And if they win on Saturday, it's going to totally change this profile, though. They've got their road trip to Gonzaga. They can pick up that win.
I don't think they'll get that. I don't like them that much. Okay. I mean, it's worth watching, but no, I just think that I'm impressed. I think they've done a very good job.
Here's the rest of the upcoming schedule. That's probably the game of the week, actually, in the conference, is that Washington State at Gonzaga game coming up on Saturday. That's probably the game most worth watching.
And Chad, I'll be at the Thursday game with Oregon State at Santa Clara, so don't forget to tune in for that one as well.
Yeah, so Oregon State, if they have any shot, it's definitely, you know, they've got to really roll in the conference. They can't afford
I need to get back. Chad, you need to get me off the no-fly list so I can get on Rocco's jet and go to the game.
Dorman, over in the A-10, where we've been talking, it's all Dayton, and then Dayton went to GW, and something horrible happened on Saturday.
Oh my god! Yeah, I don't know what if any of the Dayton team showed up, because they were absolutely slammed. George Washington was the better team on the court that day, for sure, from start to finish. But the Atlantic 10, and I know I'm a big fan, so I probably overrated, but I really think this conference, again, is starting to heat up and show us some really good teams. St. Bonaventure, all they've done is gone 14-1. They keep winning game after game. St. Louis, I think they're healthy finally, and Avila is finally getting to play the offense, and they're moving the ball like I finally felt they would be able to. Coach Schertz is great. I didn't know. It looked like he wasn't going to be able to figure it out in the first year, but all of a sudden it seems to be coming together for these two squads. And I think there's talent that could give Dayton a real run for their money based on what I've seen the last couple of weeks out of Dayton. Because before that, in Maui, I thought they looked great. So it depends on what Dayton Flyer team shows up. But there's other competitors in this conference if Dayton doesn't want to wake up.
Yeah. Tytel, how about the St. Louis team? Is it too little too late now?
Absolutely not. I need an extra 30 seconds or so for this one because I did a little research. So new coach Josh Schertz comes over. He won 32 last year at Indiana State. He only was 6-6 on Christmas Day. Since then, three straight wins by 15-plus points in each game. And his next three are against the other top four teams in this league. They host the Bonnies, then a road trip to VCU and Richmond. Kind of weird offensive numbers, though. They're almost as good from two-point land, where they shoot 60%, as they are from one-point land. They're only 65% at the free throw line. And their high-scoring trio of Isaiah Swope, Robbie Avila, and Gibson Jimerson are each averaging 18 a game. And that caused me to wonder if we've ever seen anything like that. So I looked at some other legendary trios. Carolina in 82 with Jordan, Perkins, and Worthy. Close but no cigar. 91 UNLV, Larry Johnson, Anderson Hunt, Stacey Ogman, close but no cigar. 2001 Duke, Jay Will and Shane Battier were averaging 20 a game. Boozer was not. So the best one I could come up with, if we all go all the way back to 1990, Georgia Tech. They made the Final Four with Dennis Scott, Brian Oliver, and Kenny Anderson, each scoring 20 a game before they lost to eventual champ UNLV.
So you're putting St. Louis in your Final Four.
No, I'm saying scoring trio, even if they don't make the Final Four, because it doesn't come along every generation.
I appreciate that. That's great. Some great facts there. Rocco, the Bonnies are really interesting. I look at a team, and if you're 14-1, you're 14-1. But your best one, VCU, but they played well against Utah State, who was their only real opponent so far this year.
They did, and the VCU game will matter, I think, later in the year for resume sake. Melvin Council's just been unbelievable these last five performances. He played the whole game against VCU, including the game winner with 3 seconds to go. Transfer from Wagner and played in the NCAA tournament, of course, last year after that amazing Wagner run on the road all the way through the NEC tournament. Now he's jumped all the way up to the A-10 and playing like an all-A-10 player. That's a great story. I've always liked Chance Moore doing some good things there. Noel Brown. So they're not very deep, and they got to depend a lot on the freshman, Noah Belenga. And he's done a great job in some of these performances. So I really think the Bonnies are in it for the long haul. A lot of great momentum around the program, of course, with Woj coming on board right before the season. There's just really good vibes, in my opinion. We'll see how it plays out. And I do think that VCU team, as you guys talked about briefly, is here to stay. I mean, their record doesn't show it because they fell in overtime to Seton Hall. They lost a buzzer beater basically to Bonnies. I was at the New Mexico game. They're super scrappy and competitive in a long road trip. And they lost by 3 to Nevada. I think they're going to be fine. I expect VC to be right in the race at the end.
Yeah, pull up St. Bonaventure again real quick, Chad. One of the things about them, at least from a bracketology standpoint, is an atrocious out-of-conference strength of schedule.
Well, Griggs, you kind of just stole my point that I wanted to make for the entire conference, though, because you throw away Dayton, they're all bad strength of schedules. And,
right.
And these strength of schedules are still 90% non-conference right there.
Yeah, and Rocco, we're going to send you to meet with Bernadette McClade, both you and Tytel, and try and get them some more better out-of-conference games. And maybe, honestly, the best way to make the league better is for you all to be co-commissioners and to get rid of Bernadette McClade. But that's a whole
okay,
other
okay, story. No, we're not firing any conference commissioners. Hey.
If we can talk about Bernadette like that, then I can say stuff about Jerry Palm. Come on.
Okay, good. All I said was that I think Jerry watches the anyway.
I think Bernadette watches our show too, Greg.
She might.
Yeah, I interviewed her at A10 Media Day, and I asked her about conference challenges. I don't know what else you want me to do, Griggs.
Okay. The one thing I wanted to say about St. Bonaventure in particular is the Big Four, which I'm a fan of, at least conceptually. Should they get rid of it? It did them no favors.
Well,
Buffalo,
yeah, I
Niagara
mean,
and Canisius.
Niagara, Canisius, Buffalo, not a good year for the Big Four outside of the Bonnies. But there's still plenty of room for other games here. Quick look at the upcoming schedule. The game of the week in the conference is Wednesday night's Bonnies at St. Louis game. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I apologize to Bernadette McClade. Suggesting that Rocco should replace her may have just been a low too low.
Richmond's a little surprising 2-0, but we've seen this from Richmond before.
Yeah.
Going to George Mason, we'll see if they can hold up.
You know what? I just got to throw out there. Maybe we should have Bernadette McClade replace David Griggs at our shows.
Let's not put that to a vote.
I see thumbs up across the board here. It's decided. Let's go ahead and pull this down here. Run through each of you for any of their final thoughts of the night before we get too out of hand here. Dorman, let me start with you.
Yeah, Bernadette will be our guest special speaker on the podcast later on Thursday night. I got to give you a list of teams that I think are very capable and talented enough to make a Final Four run. I know their fans and probably the team are not happy with the start, but there are some really talented teams that have taken some knocks early that I think could be end up in the Final Four. Kansas, St. John's, Gonzaga, Purdue, Michigan, UConn, Houston, and Baylor. There are some very talented teams out there that people are knocking because of a few out-of-conference losses. No one's going to win all these games. These teams, some of them are going to start to heat up and make some runs. Don't count any of these top teams out yet.
I agree. Rocco.
Yeah, well, just a few leftovers here, some spoilers to talk about. You know, we talked briefly about Notre Dame's collapse in the final seconds to lose to North Carolina, a game they had in their midst for a lot of the closing seconds. Marcus Burton is back. I think that's the big story for them. And with him back, it's a little bit of a surprise return. He was supposed to be out another week or two. Notre Dame's overall profile is probably blown up for any at-large hopes, but they're going to be, a major spoiler in the ACC. I have nothing but a lot of respect for Shrewsbury as a coach. And I think there's some losses coming to Notre Dame's opponents in the near future. So watch out for that. Tytel did a great job talking about St. Louis. That's my spoiler in the A-10 for sure. And then, again, like in the Big 12, there's a lot of emerging stories, different types of teams all over the place. But I do think that Texas Tech, they are just crazy offensive, which is super surprising. and not very good defensively, because Grant McCaslin was the complete opposite coach at North Texas, but clearly showing his ability to be a personnel-based coach, meaning that he's got a very high-level offensive skill set group of guys this year, not so much defensively principled, which I'm sure they'll fix later. And he's just playing to their strengths. So another sign of a great coach. I'm excited to see what Texas Tech does long term.
Yeah, I think Texas Tech was, if we had a few more minutes, I would actually hit on them. I think that's going to be interesting the rest of the season with that team. I agree with you completely. Tytel, I'll bring the screen share back up for you.
So I wanted to talk about the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame Class of 2024. It was announced on New Year's Eve. 8 members this year. Just to run through them briefly, 2-time All-American Tom Stith of the Bonnies, 2-time NCAA champ Dave Myers of the Bruins, 2-time All-American Cy Green of Duquesne, 1957 National Player of the Year Lenny Rosenbluth of Carolina, 2,000 point scorer Wayne Estes at Utah State, one of the top 50 rebounders in NBA history, Sam Lacy of New Mexico State, 2-time All-American John Rudometkin at USC, and 1967 NIT champ Coach Jack Hartman, who was at Southern Illinois and Kansas State. I was fortunate enough to interview Lenny's former teammate, Tom Kearns, about his career, and Sam Lacy's former radio play-by-play guy, Jack Nixon, about his career. So it's been great for me just to get a chance to talk about these legends. And sadly, each of these 8 have passed away. So if I could add one New Year's resolution to my list this year, if we can try to induct the greatest players and coaches in the game while they're still alive, so that they can fully appreciate this tremendous honor.
Yeah, it is a shame that all 8 of them are no longer with us.
I appreciate that sentiment too. Yeah. And there's a few other Hall of Fames, be it the music or the baseball or whatever, that you think waits a little too long. That's a great sentiment, John.
Thank you.
Greg, you want to finish the show off?
Yeah, I guess I'll go back to the Atlantic 10. And as a fan of basketball, I really like this conference and want it to do well. It's one of 7 basketball-centric conferences that doesn't play any level of football. It's certainly not on the level of the Big East, but I like to think it's at least as good as the Mountain West and West Coast. But maybe it isn't. And they're in sort of a weird place. Rocco has mentioned this, I don't know about on the air, but in discussion. They're good enough and they're in the markets that they need to sort of be able to afford to buy the bye games, but they also are good enough to where a lot of the teams don't want to play them, but they're not so good. They're basically considered more of a risk than they are of something to gain for a lot of the bigger programs. So they end up with a lot of these crappy schedules. I don't know what to do about that, but this conference, it's got a lot of rich history. It's got part of the Big 5 in it. It's got some really unique programs and fan bases like St. Bonaventure and Dayton and VCU and Richmond. It's got great rivalries. I just like this league, and I think it would be better for the game if it were better in a bigger spotlight, but it doesn't have a media deal. They don't seem to get the out-of-conference showcase games that that the other conferences get. I mean, even Memphis out of the American can get those games. And I don't know. I wish I had my best idea is to make Rocco the commissioner.
Here we go again. And they do have a media deal. They've got games on USA Network, I believe, which is part of the NBC sports family every week. So let's not say there's no media deal.
Yeah, right? I didn't mean to – thank you for correcting that. I didn't mean to say that there wasn't one, but it's not – on the level that a lot of the other conferences have.
Okay, fair enough. All right, but on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. On behalf of John Tytel, David Dorman up here, Rocco Miller, check him out at bracketeer.org, and Bernadette McLean, David Griggs down there at the bottom row. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again on Wednesday night with our Under the Radar, and next Sunday night with another Bracket Rundown show, and next Monday night with another Hoops HD report. Talk to you again real soon.